LAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Michelle Franzen. Republicans and the White House taking a victory lap after the House voted to pass the final version of the mega bill. It came after a long and contentious haul through Congress. ABC's Selena Wang has more.
The White House believes that in the passage of this bill, the president is fulfilling what the American people voted for. It includes extending President Trump's 2017 tax cuts. These are tax cuts primarily for the wealthiest Americans. It also includes ending taxes on tips and overtime, something that President Trump had campaigned on, but it also includes steep cuts to food assistance and Medicaid. We're talking about estimates that more than 11 million Americans could lose their health care coverage in the next decade. It also adds an estimated trillions of dollars to the federal deficit.
A rural clinic in Nebraska says it's already closing its doors due to the impending Medicaid cuts. President Trump wanted it finalized by July 4th. He's expected to sign it tomorrow. This is ABC News.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Governor Tony Evers and the Wisconsin State Legislature officially passed a new biennial budget in the early hours of Thursday morning. The newly approved budget covers over $111 billion in spending over the next 2 years, including increased funding for the child care industry and universities of Wisconsin. The budget also includes a roughly $1.4 billion tax cut targeting the middle class. Governor Evers and lawmakers rushed to complete the budget process to avoid complications with Medicaid funding under the federal budget bill. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers signed a pair of bills on Wednesday to pursue more nuclear power development in the state. One bill would provide $2 million to fund a study on potential locations for a nuclear fusion power plant. The other establishes a board to advance nuclear power production goals and organize a nuclear power summit in 2028. Upon signing the bills, Governor Evers said exploring nuclear power production is another way to lower carbon emissions and combat climate change while lowering energy costs for residents. Ashland County officials say the tourism industry saw a slight dip in 2024 despite most other counties in the state seeing strong growth. According to the Ashland Chamber of Commerce, the overall economic impact generated by tourism in the county dropped from $66 million in 2023 to $65 million last year. Direct visitor spending as well as local and state tax collection also saw slight drops last year. County officials say tourism is still a major part of the local economy, and the industry did see a slight increase in total labor income. A groundbreaking ceremony was held at the Duluth International Airport on Tuesday for a new hangar to serve as a permanent home for LifeLink. The company provides emergency air medical transportation, which means efficiency when responding to calls is critically important. The new hangar is funded by over $3.6 million of state and federal money and should be completed by the end of the year. LifeLink currently operates out of the Richard Bong Memorial Airport in Superior, and the new hangar will be able to accommodate both planes and helicopters. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The series finale. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers and the Mets square off for Game 3 of their series tonight. The two teams stand at one game apiece. Yesterday, the Brewers won the first of a doubleheader, 7-2. The Mets went on to win the nightcap, 7-3. Milwaukee's Jacob Mizorowski giving up 5 runs in the second inning, including a grand slam. Things started to unravel after that. Manager Pat Murphy.
He'd have it for one pitch and didn't, and then you could just see the ball wasn't coming out of his fingers the same, and you could see the frustration building, and that's too good of a team and too good of a lineup. You know, this is the days you realize how good these guys are, all major league players. It's so tough to perform at the highest level and be consistent. When you're off a little bit, it can be the difference, and Miz just wasn't in sync.
So tonight it'll be Jose Quintana on the mound against New York's left-hander David Peterson. The Cubs beat the Guardians 5-4. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. An isolated storm possible tonight, otherwise partly cloudy, warm and muggy with lows in the low 70s. Mostly sunny, hot, and humid for tomorrow. Highs within a few degrees of 90. Showers and storms possible tomorrow night and Saturday. High low 80s. Currently it's 87.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Tracy Ann Mangold, how would you describe what it is that Brian Schimming is caught in the crossfires of?
He's the first paid state chair that they've ever had. And so the belief was that maybe that'll increase his ability to fundraise for the state. Obviously, that has not worked out so well. I've been told that he thinks 4 phone calls a day to fundraise is a lot, which, you know, isn't.
104 might be a good start.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, happy 4th of July. We have a specially curated Matinair on air for you, but Free Ticket Fridays is happening. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
It is this moment right now, and we need people that have wealth and access to step the hell up.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
We can't take this as a country to have a leader who is so ill-informed and we look terrible.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
You got a bad sandwich at your favorite deli. What do you do about it? We can talk about whatever you want to sound off on.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Actually, here's Matt Rothschild, because Maggie is out today, starting the July 4th weekend early, as any sensible person would. I'm not as sensible as Maggie is, because I'm here and happy to be here to guest host for her today, and happy to be with you on this eve of July 4th. There's certainly been a lot going on the last 24 hours, budget-wise, and so we're going to dig into that in this first hour with Robert Craig of Citizen Action, and then in the second hour, we'll be joined by the one and only Jim Santel, one of Maggie's co-hosts, who has his own terrific show, Amicus, a Law Review, on the Civic Media Radio Network on the weekends. You can join the conversation right now by phone or text by calling 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I want to hear from you as to what you think about Governor Evers signing the budget in the wee hours of the morning, or what just happened in the Capitol today in Washington, D.C., as Trump was able to ram through, finally, that big, hideous bill. So let's get into it. Robert Craig is the longtime executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, now celebrating its 40th anniversary. Happy anniversary, Robert, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thank you on behalf of all of our leaders over all the decades. And it was great to see you, Matt. You've been in this a long time.
Yeah, as have you. How long have you been with Citizen Action?
I started in 2007. I've been executive director since 2009.
So that's a nice chunk of time.
You get handed these jobs during financial crises. So it was in the middle of the national financial collapse that also created a big crisis for Citizen Action in Wisconsin, as you would imagine.
Yeah, and you lived through that. I never, as an executive director for 4 decades, there were a couple things I didn't like about that job. One was the constant fundraising. I was a glorified telemarketer by night, and the grant writing, which isn't really writing, it's grant plotting, kind of. And then I also didn't like the HR stuff. I just wanted to write and talk. So now I get to kind of just talk with Civic Media here. I'm supposed to be retired, but I love what Civic Media is doing, so I'm happy to jump in here whenever I can, whenever a host needs a break. So tell me.
Matt, I was going to say, Matt, when you were heading up Progressive Magazine, my Aunt Eloise, now deceased, who lived in Bethesda, Maryland, always gave money to you because you personally called her. There was no other magazine where she heard from the head guy. So I have verification that you were a glorified telemarketer, but my Aunt Louise really appreciated it.
Oh, that's good to hear. I remember I called not your aunt, but someone else too many times. The only thing she said to me was, "I'm so sick of your pestiferous calls." That word pestiferous kind of stuck in my brain forever. So I guess I didn't call her back again. But yeah, I you can't be too proud to beg when you're running a progressive nonprofit, as you know, Robert Craig.
No, absolutely.
Well, let's dig into the Evers signing of the state budget. I want to get your immediate reaction to it.
Actually, there was something unprecedented that went on in Governor Evers' first two terms. This was his fourth budget. And I think people were taken aback when he settled the first budget without much of a fight in 2019 after declaring on badger care expansion that he would fight like hell. I know advocates, legislators, Democratic legislators were all stunned when he, with some line on vetoes, largely signed the Republican budget. This time, there's been a real push on this, both from legislators and from organized groups with real bases of members, CIS National Wisconsin, the group I lead, Wisdom, the great faith-based group around the state, Wisconsin Public Education Network, which is a great group of education advocates, We Can, which is the child care workers that really made a big push this election, and WEAC, the very powerful and large teachers union. We're pushing the governor to force a fight with the Republicans, bring the public into it by stating what his bottom lines were. And that between that and the fact that we have a very close large in the state Senate, he had a lot more leverage to get a better budget. In fact, they needed Democratic votes to pass this budget in the state Senate because they lost 4 Republican votes to this budget. And it's our collective view that he settled because he wanted to settle by the deadline, and it's not really a deadline. The budget can be done late. It's been done many times. That he didn't get as good deal as he could have, and I can go into the details, but not getting badger care expansion the last year, we can get the full federal funding, the 95% federal funding. Actually, for schools, even though there was some increase in special ed, having a 0% increase in general aid to public schools. That is, going back, experts at Wisconsin Public Education Network and WEAC can't find the previous budget that had 0, and with inflation, that's a cut. And this is after 18 years of underfunding. Child care, it's actually reduced from what we had before in the middle of a crisis where the previous child care program was inadequate. So I think those who are pushing the governor to stand and fight or disappointed with his decision and with the small number of Democrats in the Senate and the Assembly that supported this budget.
You mentioned there wasn't a deadline, and yet they hurried it through in the wee hours of the morning, saying that the deadline was the need to get this funding for hospitals that was going to vanish if they didn't sign it before Trump's budget sailed through today. Is that a legitimate reason or is it not?
It's not legitimate. I'll explain how this worked. This relates to the big, ugly bill we can talk right about. One of the ways states have funded Medicaid, because, you know, these kind of complexities of funding, disengage voters, is to have taxes on providers of health care that are then used to draw down more federal Medicaid money as a state part of the match, because it's a program that's state and federal funded. So the state puts up money in the federal government more than matches it. And so it's a loophole that they're closing in this new budget. So they want to do this before Trump signed his budget so they could get the last amount of cut they could get out of this provider tax loophole. Now, the hospitals could have gotten even more money with badger care expansion because we're leaving $1.5 billion of federal money on the table by not doing it. And then they would have been fulfilling their charitable purpose by trying to cover more people, not just increasing their own rates. Also, the Joint Finance Committee and Governor could have done that as a standalone bill, got that done, and kept going on the budget. There was no reason to ram through an inadequate budget just to appease the hospitals. And there's nothing in there that requires the hospitals to actually lower costs for patients, stay in any communities that they're not in now if they're withdrawing from rural areas and urban cores. And in fact, Mary Filkowski, I don't know if you've dealt with her, the senator from Wausau, very conservative senator, she switched her vote and voted no, and she said that this is just a great giveaway to the hospitals and it won't do anything to reduce the cost of healthcare. And I'm not often agreeing with Senator Filkowski, but she is correct about that. And the governor, when presented with that by media, called it BS, though he didn't abbreviate it, and said that our hospitals are working hard. So he was listening to the hospital association. You didn't need to do this quicker just for that. That could have been done separately in the time frame, and you could have also done Badger Care expansion, Federer Schools, child care, shared revenue, other priorities. You know, mass transit, Matt, I don't know if you know this, and headlines, was zeroed out, just like school aid. So it was that's a reduction. Milwaukee mass transit system, MCTS, is in deficit and will have to cut services from people who have in the north side of Milwaukee who have nowhere else to get transportation. You can't afford cars and you won't be able to get to work. So there's a lot of reasons not to have settled for this budget.
I know there's a lot of anger on the progressive side. I'm seeing it on Facebook already from some progressive legislators and certainly from activists who wanted a better deal out of the budget or for the governor to threaten to veto the whole thing. Are you surprised at the vehemence on the progressive side here?
No, because that alignment I told you about with the organizing groups that have members across the state and unions, and AFT Wisconsin also was part of this coalition in addition to WEAC. We were also working with allies on the inside, so there was unprecedented communication. So we knew we had a shared position. We had all the rumors from legislators as to what was going on in the secret negotiations. And when the governor and then yesterday were completely coordinated. So a lot of the voices you're seeing in the media from progressive legislators that are critiquing this were in direct communication the whole time and still are with groups like Citizen Action, WEAC, Wisconsin Publication Education Network, Wisdom, the Child Care Advocates.
I mean, it is kind of shocking to me that there was no funding other than for special education for K through 12, given that Evers was school superintendent and, you know, acted like the education secretary, knows the education issue, had a tremendous amount of pressure from the grassroots at these hearings on the budget. Everyone showed up saying we need more money K through 12. What was in his mind there? Do you think that he didn't, you know, he made child care a bottom line. He didn't make public education a bottom line.
You know, it's hard to get into the soul of elected leaders, right? So it's sort of, and you do that, you know, historians, they try to guess, but they're not sure. They give hypotheses, right? He has been a disappointment in the year of the child and given his background on education. It's been his brand not to smooth out the edges, to be bipartisan Tony, Uncle Tony kind of image, right? Very approachable, wears well. And this brand seems to, the political brand seems to, in my opinion, getting in the way of why you become governor. That is for the policy, not for the successful politics. So he's the only, in the Marquette polling, he's not super popular, but he's the only statewide official above water, so to speak, more popular than unpopular. And is thinking about a third term. So this does seem to work as politics because people are, you know, get concerned about all of the factional infighting, et cetera, as they see it. But in a polarized electorate, there's really, I mean, and political system with a lot of gerrymandering and safe districts, there's no other way to get things like make healthcare affordable, fund your schools adequately. So I think it's partly what the political advice he's getting and the one that want to be politically successful, whether this is also a conflict aversion where he just doesn't like to have a knockdown drag out, that could be, but I don't want to go too far and try to be the amateur psychologist.
It may be a temperamental issue, though. You might be onto something there. I'm speaking with Robert Craig, who's the executive director over at Citizen Action. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, and we'll be right back. I want to hear what you think about the governor signing this budget. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We'll be right back. We rebuild the such and for our.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
This fall, there's only one place to be, Camp Randall Stadium. Wisconsin football returns with can't-miss matchups, including Maryland, Iowa, Washington, and more. From the first touchdown to jump around and the celebration of the fifth quarter. Experience the traditions and unforgettable memories that make Wisconsin football so special. Single-game tickets are now on sale. Lock in your spot today by visiting uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. Wisconsin football game day starts here. We'll see you at Camp Randall.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org, a message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. Maggie's out, starting her holiday early. And I'm joined by Robert Craig, longtime executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. You can join our conversation at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We're talking about the budget that Governor Evers signed in the wee hours of the morning. And we'll quickly, probably at the half hour, switch over to what happened in D.C. today, because it was quite a day there. To play devil's advocate for a second, Robert, I hear the governor say and others that this was a compromise budget. That's what politics is about. No one ever gets everything that they wanted. And basically, it was the best he could do or best he could get. How do you respond to that?
And that line of argument is always available. And it's hard for average citizens to know what the elected leader could or could not have gotten. So one way to think about this is just how his campaign for the budget was run. So he did not include Democratic legislators in the negotiations until the very end. He brought the Senate Democrats in when it became clear that there weren't the votes to pass the budget with only Republican votes. By the way, we figured this for a couple months, so this was a knowable fact.
Wasn't a shocker.
Yeah, and they were kind of presented with a fait accompli. We've already negotiated all of this and we need you to sign off. So they weren't given a huge role, actually. So really, if you had had the analysis early that you had more leverage, you not only had the veto leverage, but the leverage of holding the decisive votes in the state Senate with the closer margins because of the fairer maps, then you could have had played much more on offense. But even more than that, the reason chief executives, governors, and presidents became very powerful in the 20th century, started in the progressive era, is because they learned how to use public opinion and mobilize it against the legislature. That's what Fighting Bob La Follette did. That was an innovation. That's what the Progressive Era presidents did. That's what FDR did, and so on. And he didn't do that. The way you do that is you lay bottom lines. You say, I want this amount of education funding. I want badger care expansion. I want this much child care funding. I want this on criminal justice, the popular things. And then you make it clear who is against it. So there is pressure on the Republican legislature. And on top of that, it creates a choice for them, because if they simply block the budget, people know why they did, and it increases Democrat accountability in the next election. And that is the playbook for increasing his leverage. He didn't do it, which is a clear sign of leaving power on the table and really wanting the brand, the outcome of being able to call it a bipartisan deal, more than wanting to get the best possible advances. So my case would be, if he used every piece of power on at his disposal, including the public, which is a huge power for the only person elected by all the voters, the governor or the president, then you could say, okay, maybe this is as much he could have done and it was a good deal. At this point, I think there's a lot of evidence to believe that he didn't fight very hard and that that wasn't the priority.
He's never been much of a fighter, in my opinion. I think he's done a good job in some ways, but he's a lover, not a fighter. He's a compromiser, not a battler. And at this stage of our politics, both here in Wisconsin and certainly nationally, there's a huge hunger for a fighter. We've got a couple texts I wanted to read, Robert Craig. Gary in Madison says, Evers plays softball while Republicans play hardball. Jake Troy in Mount Horeb says, I really hope that Governor Evers got assurances from Voss that the money would be spent instead of sitting in the joint finance like PFAS and other money from the last budget. Are you concerned about that latter possibility?
I would be. I think the second, I agree with both texts, but the second text raises a great point. I doubt there is much that was won that way. Here's how I would see it. You know, people have different temperaments who become leaders, right? They become leaders for some reason, usually some public purpose, at least at the beginning, maybe throughout, depending on the leader. But they can't choose the times they live in. And so maybe their temperament doesn't match up with what's needed at a certain time, and maybe it does, or maybe they need to adapt, right? There have been politicians in the history of American British politics, for example, that have evolved quickly seeing changes. And I think you're right. Right now, with a lot of the usual conventional means of power, right? Legislation, courts, the various norms that have governed Republican government, going by the wayside, the leadership requires not only fighting because you're against a maximalist opponent, MAGA Republicans, that use all of their power, including legitimate power. And in addition, you need to wield the public. In fact, authoritarian regimes, and we are in some in-between period, only lose out eventually if enough of the public is mobilized in non-peaceful resistance. You need to start doing that. And if you're not willing to do that kind of leadership, if it's not your temperament, you don't want to do it, then this is not the time for you to lead, actually.
In peaceful resistance. That's why those No Kings rallies were so great. And they were all over Wisconsin, not just in Madison and Milwaukee, but in dozens and dozens of small towns. I interviewed a 91-year-old woman in Stoughton who said this was the first protest she's ever been to in her life, but she was just so disgusted by what was going on. So that's why I think, you know, maybe Evers was right as a candidate to beat Walker. He was the best way to get Walker out of here, but he may not be the best fighter right now. And the times, as you say, requires a fighter at this point. I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action Wisconsin. We're going to come back after a short break to talk about what happened in Washington, D.C. with Trump and his budget. Yes, getting through, unfortunately. We'll try to deal with that in the next half hour. This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Please call in at 855-752-4842 or text us there. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call has announced a court order to stop the Trump administration from blocking access to public health and social service programs. The multi-state lawsuit filed in May sought to block Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy from eliminating more than a dozen agencies and firing 10,000 employees. The coalition argued the changes immediately endangered lives and left crucial systems in chaos. The cuts would have affected the CDC, Center for Tobacco Products, and the Office of Head Start. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is reminding residents to boat responsibly if they plan to get out on the water for the holiday weekend. According to a press release, the four leading causes of watercraft crashes are inexperience, not paying enough attention, general recklessness, and speeding. Officials also say most people who drown in boating-related accidents know how to swim, but become incapacitated or weighed down in the water. Residents out on the water should stay sober and always wear a life jacket for their own safety. Burnett County officials are advising residents of a boat landing closure in Oakland Township. According to a press release, the Devil's Lake boat landing will be closed for about 45 days beginning on July 21st. The closure is part of a reconstruction project, which will see the installation of a new boat ramp, the replacement of the aging restroom building, and the repavement of the driveway. County officials also say the project will force them to partially close the parking lot area from July 16th to July 20th to set up the necessary equipment for the project. Wisconsin Credit Union has announced the start date for their annual summer food drive aimed at helping kids who no longer have access to school meals. According to a press release, the organization announced that all of their offices will be participating in this year's Schools Out summer food drive from July 7th to July 19th. The company has offices across western Wisconsin, including Eau Claire, St. Croix, Polk, Washburn, and Barron counties. Both non-perishable food items and monetary donations will be accepted through the food drive. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Big Brother Season 27 is about to drop, but there is an exciting new twist, according to the people who created said twist. Variety says three contestants from previous seasons will drop by every Friday night to analyze the sitch. Other highlights for this coming season will include a mystery hotel theme and a living room with chess guardians, whatever that means. Season 27 of Big Brother drops July 10th on CBS. In other Season 27 news, the creators of South Park are not happy about the delay in their latest season reaching viewers. Trey Parker and Matt Stone are blaming the Paramount merger with Skydance for the long wait between seasons. Season 26 finished 2 years ago. A recent update was that the new season would drop July 9, but that has been pushed back again to July 27. Just guessing, we will see Parker and Stone's frustration with the networks in a South Park episode in the near future. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. An isolated storm possible tonight, otherwise partly cloudy, warm and muggy with lows in the low 70s. Mostly sunny, hot, and humid for tomorrow, highs within a few degrees of 90. Showers and storms possible tomorrow night and Saturday, high low 80s. Currently it's 87.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Years ago, I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me, and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, sure, you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wear sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time for a special Independence Day edition of the show featuring some of our tours around what makes Wisconsin great and free brewer tickets to give away. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Hey, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie's starting her July 4th weekend early, and I'm Matt Rothschild. Grateful that you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join the conversation we're having by phone or by text by calling 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. What do you think of the budget that Governor Evers just signed? What do you think of Trump's budget that just passed a few hours ago? I'm joined still, and I'm glad I'm joined still by Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, enjoying its 40th anniversary this year. Before I get your reaction, Robert, I wanted to, first of all, say that the Democrats in the Wisconsin delegation did themselves well by speaking out against this bill so forcefully. Mark Pocan, Tammy Baldwin, and Gwen Moore. Gwen Moore had used one of my favorite lines from Shakespeare in her 1 minute that she got today to talk. So we're going to play that bit. Thank you, Jacob, for running that.
If you are a Republican with misgivings with the massive debt that this bill creates, or if you're worried about stripping 17 million Americans of health care access, I tell you that now is your moment. A coward dies 1,000 times before his death, but the valiant taste of death but once. Shakespeare. So vote your constituents, vote your conscience. This is how you will be remembered. Better to vote your conscience today and face an angry tweet than to have your legacy be one of equivocation and cowardice. By their deeds, you will know them. I urge all my colleagues to oppose debt, death, and hunger. Oppose this cruel legislation.
That's Representative Gwen Moore on the big hideous bill that passed today. I mean, she raises a really interesting point, Robert, and that is, why do politicians cast a legacy vote like this? How do they look themselves in the mirror? Don't you think upon retirement they're going to be filled with regret? Is it that important for them to keep their title? It just kind of amazes me. I mean, Murkowski was another example. I mean, it amazes me that not more politicians at some point say it's not worth it to have this title and have this seat if I'm going to lose my integrity.
It looks like Senator Tom Tillis from North Carolina did that, but he had to announce his retirement basically when doing it because he was being threatened by President Trump with a primary and blown up.
But good on him for doing it. Yeah.
But he did it. But you had a number of, you had Jim Justice from West Virginia, Senator, you had Senator Josh Hawley basically say this was terrible, but they voted for it and they hope they want to fix it later.
And you also had our own obnoxious Senator Ron Johnson, who was claiming he was forever going to be opposed to this bill because it's not harsh enough. And of course, he collapsed, as he usually did, in Trump's loving arms.
Yeah, our national, I studied collapse like House of Cards, and they were right about that. That was pretty quick after all of that fomenting and grandstanding. I do think it's interesting just given how many members of the Republican House and Senate did not like this bill, how they all found their way to vote for it. And there's really little explanation other than blind ambition, right? And Gwen Moore nailed it with her, you know, implication of Jesus Christ with by their deeds, you will know them, right? A famous parable. And it's a parable about how you know who people really are and who is with us and who is not with us. And Jesus gave very simple advice, you know, don't listen to what they say or profess, look at their deeds, right? And this is the deed. So that's good advice outside of the religious, for just life among humans.
Absolutely. I loved what Gwen Moore had to say there in 1 minute. That's about the best 1 minute you can get out of a public speaker or out of a politician. I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to grab a couple texters and then a phone call. And you can join the conversation, 855-752-4842. I'm Matt Rothschild, sitting in here for Maggie Dawn with Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action. Dana in La Crosse said, nobody is talking about this, but the big, so-called big, beautiful bill is just Trump and his fifth grade vocabulary trying to steal build back better from Biden. It's as simple as that. And then we have Sue in Franklin saying, probably good that Maggie's on vacation today. Her hair would be on fire for sure. No doubt about that. Sue concludes, this is a sad day for America. And now we have Joe from Madison on the line. I always like getting Joe's phone calls. Joe, what's on your mind?
A great discussion with your guest today. Really, really important. Two points that I would make. First off, in terms of, number one, run that clip from Gwen Moore again and again and again. That is the most succinct statement of, you know, people rising to the moment or people running to the underneath their desk and hiding. And I think we haven't seen the someone making that step of coming forward in the way that they could. I would add to this discussion, there was a little blurb, and this just tells you something about where a lot of these Republicans are, because there was this person posted, look, we have 17 million people that just lost health care, 18 million kids just lost school meals, and 3 million Americans just lost food assistance. And the congressman from the 3rd District of Wisconsin, Derek Van Orden, replied to that, yes, with a big exclamation. What does that say about that person? You know, what does that say about who you are and what you are? I mean, why that this would be something that you would celebrate, that children don't have food that they need, that people have lost health care, and the tumbling down that we all know that happens when people lose their health care. We're talking medical bankruptcies. We're talking all sorts of awful things resulting from not being able to have adequate health care. So you had said before, and I think this is maybe worth part of the discussion too, you had said there's something about people who can rise to the moment. And I'm just wondering who on the horizon is there. You were expressing kind of frustrations with Governor Evers that he didn't push harder on more things. Who do you see on the horizon, whether it be, you know, on the national side or on the state side, that you think would be the kind of person that could get in there and make a difference, open people's hearts and be strong and be open? I don't know. I'd be curious to hear what you guys have to say, because this really is a time where somebody could rise to the occasion and say, this isn't right. We can't.
Thanks so much, Joy. Joe, that's just tremendous insight and also a really good question. On the Derek Van Orden, I mean, he's a sick individual. He is a sadistic individual. That comment of his where he's dismissing all those 17 million who are going to lose health care, 18 million who are going to lose school lunches, 3 million who are going to lose food stamps, kids. I mean, to say yes to that is really disgusting and revolting. But there is an element of sadism in this whole Trump administration that we shouldn't ignore. I mean, that was Kristi Noem going down to that grotesque prison in El Salvador in front of the half-naked prisoners. That's, you know, alligator Alcatraz, what they're calling now, down in the Everglades. And it's a part of fascism, this appeal to sadism. And so we shouldn't ignore it. And I'm glad you brought up Derek Van Orden's own little bit of it. As to who will rise to the occasion, I'm interested to hear what Dr. Robert Craig says. Certainly on the national level, AOC is doing that and Bernie's doing that. But I'm sure there are others, and Gwen Moore's doing that too. Mark Pocan was doing that here. As to who's going to, you know, lead the ramparts or run us to the ramparts, what do you say, Robert?
Yeah, and let me speak to Van Orden and then to that question, because and happy to get into the nuts and bolts of the healthcare piece. We have a lot of members in Van Orden's district, Congressional District 3. Our chapter is called Organizing COPS. We have one in the Driftless area around La Crosse and one in Eau Claire, northwest of Wisconsin, and put tremendous pressure on, had a ton of town hall meetings on Medicaid and what the cuts would mean, not just in Eau Claire and La Crosse, but in a lot of the rural areas, your Rice Lakes, your St. Croix Falls, your Adamses, and had actions in front of Van Orden's office. Van Orden wouldn't meet with his constituents.
Shocking.
At all. And in fact, claimed that there were credible threats against the safety of his family, that on inspection don't look that credible. But honestly, he's up for re-election. There has to be accountability. But I was going to do a quote from him that I had saved, but that your caller, Joe, did great. So we can just, I think, believe you, Matt, Joe, and I. On leaders, you know, this becomes this punditry. It becomes like deciding who's the next player in the Brewers farm system that's going to be a star, right? I think that movements create leaders, not the other way around. In our society, we have it in reverse. So the movement that is pushing the grassroots movement on national Democrats, not just to stay in a safe lane, but to do what is actually necessary to stop authoritarian overreach by Trump, and the push on Governor Evers to actually mobilize public opinion and fight, building that kind of constituency and the kind of callers and texts we've had to this show today, Matt, that is the kind of thing that is going to help produce the leader. And you can't just look at it based on their record. I agree, Bernie Sanders and AOC have done a great job, doing a great job. But I would say that there are some leaders who will rise to the occasion who may not have seemed like that leader before. And that's been true throughout throughout the history of democracy. But we absolutely need to keep pushing. And I believe that we need that kind of leader to start throwing their hat in the ring. It's going to starts local. It starts at things like state assembly and state senate primaries, and maybe and primaries probably for the governorship, because the governorship is up, for example. The presidential primaries further off, and you need to have much more status in order to be. But you see a lot of people making plays. AOC, Chris Murphy is a setter who used to be a moderate, now has moved very much into a resistance wing, and there are others who are doing that.
Yeah, those are some good names to throw around. We've got a call from Mike from Muscadet. Mike, what's on your mind?
Yeah, you guys have a tendency to quote the Bible when it suits your needs. But, you know, God hates the hands that shed innocent blood when it comes to abortion. So you guys are nothing but hypocrites.
Well, Mike,
I will just say there's no scriptural basis for the anti-abortion position. In fact, the best biblical scholarship tells us that the practice in Jesus's time was at quickening, which is about 6 months. So you can believe the version of the Bible people told you. You can't point to the spot in the Bible because it isn't there.
Well, thanks, Robert. You're a better biblical scholar than I am. I wasn't going to be able to handle that that well. So it's always great to have you right here, being able to quote the scripture, or at least quote what's in the scripture and what's not in the scripture, because it is so often that we are given these alleged passages from the Bible or commandments from the Bible that actually, when you look at it, it's not really there. And
true,
also our friend,
confession.
I beg your pardon, go ahead.
My grandfather, who I was close to, was a theologian.
Well, there you
go. And I just did a paper on his theology for the 30th anniversary of his death. So I'm actually better versed than usual, because I read a lot of theology last year to write the paper.
Well, it was a great answer you gave, and that must have been an interesting paper to write. Email it to me. I'd love to take a look.
Oh, I'd love to. I will.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be back in just a second. You're not going to want to miss the quotes we have from Hakeem Jeffries, who gave one of the most impassioned speeches on the House floor that I've ever seen. So we'll be right back with that on the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7th, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive coercive acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, 8 colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee, on June 7th, presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's Independence Resolution word for word. Resolved that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show all across the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie's starting her July 4th weekend early. I'm Matt Rothschild, grateful that you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and you can join our conversation by phone or by text by calling 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Call or text, and we'll try to get you on. I'm here with Robert Craig, the Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, celebrating its 40th anniversary, and Robert's been there for a long time. Not all 40 years, but a lot of them. We want to talk a little bit more about what happened in Washington, D.C. today with the big, hideous bill. I think the best way to get back into this is listening to the amazing speech that Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries gave from the well of the House, speaking for more than 8 hours, a record. Let's play a little bit of his great conclusion, Jake.
That civil rights movement, we can learn a lot from it. Started December of 1955. And Rosa Parks sat down on that bus so that all of us could have the courage to stand up. Yes. Wasn't an easy struggle. All the odds were stacked against these civil rights heroes and foot soldiers. And during the early days of the movement, a difficult part of the movement, Dr. King, after they've been targeted, arrested, beaten, harassed by the authorities. He traveled to Brooklyn, New York.
Yes.
And spoke at the Concord Baptist Church. I think it was in March of 1956. And he said to a group of people of every race, every religion, every life experience, the Concord Baptist Church in Bedford-Stuyvesant, said to them, no matter what the odds, we've got to press on. Dr. King said that if you can't fly, run.
That's right.
If you can't run, walk. If you can't walk, crawl. But at all times, press on. And keep pressing. And so as I take my seat, I just want to say to the American people that no matter what the outcome is on this singular day, we're going to press on. We're going to press on. We're going to press on. We're going to press on for our children, press on for our seniors, press on for our veterans, press on for our unions, press on for our farmers, press on for our dreamers, press on for working class Americans, press on for the middle class, press on for all who aspire to be part of the middle class, press on for the poor, press on for the sick, press on for the afflicted. Press on for the least. Press on for the lost. Press on for the left behind. Press on for the rule of law. Press on for the American way of life. Press on for democracy. We're going to press on until victory is won. I yield back.
So that was the amazing speech this noontime afternoon, I guess. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, who spoke for more than 8 hours today. I listened to that live. I didn't listen to all 8 hours, but I caught the ending and I caught a lot of what he was talking about, including all the good amendments the Democrats had proposed for really common sense, decent amendments to this horrible bill that Republicans just dismayed, got rid of out of hand. So, Robert Craig, how should people press on?
Well, that was a tremendous ending to after speaking 8 hours. So, and my PhD is in rhetoric, so that was fantastic. But I would say that a lot of times movements are broken down just into dramatic parts, like, you know, some of the great moments with MLK Jr. at the front, right? But what's missed is the years of hard organizing and individual people deciding to take risks and get involved in the dark heart of Mississippi and the Mississippi Delta, which was where it was terrorist state, where stepping out, trying to register a vote could get you killed or fired or lose all your livelihood, evicted, etc. People need to join. The atrophy of democracy is not enough people being involved. And joining means working together in groups with people to make change. Don't just give money to politicians or just engage on Facebook or other social media. You need to join groups like Citizen Action Wisconsin. If you're a teacher, get active in your union, for example. But ultimately, it's that all that spade work that's less glamorous and isn't even visible is underneath the tension most of the time that makes the breakthroughs possible. And the only way to save democracy is to rebuild it, and the muscle of democracy is more people being involved, and that's what we've lost. We have a lot of great people involved, but we need a lot more of them. Interesting, no authoritarian state in world history has stood up to 3.5% of its electorate of the people being organized. And so we don't need everyone, but we need that core of people to be heavily involved.
Absolutely. Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action Wisconsin, thanks so much for joining me on the Maggie Dawn Show. And I'm going to be right back with Jim Santel of Amicus, a law review. Please stay tuned.
listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The massive budget and spending bureau cleared the final hurdle, passing in the House today. The vote,
on this vote
mostly along party lines.
The yeas are 218, the nays are 214.
Two Republicans voted against the sweeping package with Democratic opposition. Before leaving for Iowa, President Trump taking a victory lap on the big win.
I think I have more power now, I do. You know, I could say, oh, gee, I don't know. I think I probably do because we've had a great record of success.
President Trump expected to sign the bill into law tomorrow at a July 4th ceremony. Russia today becoming the first country to formally recognize the Taliban's government in Afghanistan since it seized power in 2021. Russia removing it from its list of outlawed organizations. An investigation underway after a section of the wing flap to a Delta Airlines jet fell out of the sky and landed onto somebody's driveway. That jet was coming in for a landing at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. This is ABC News.